Welcome to the Age of Vision radio show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear. Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision, and today is November 4th. Can you actually believe it? It's November 4th, 2015. It's 8 o'clock in the morning Pacific Standard Time. Today we're going to be having an interview. I had hoped to have Mimi Gurman on first thing in the morning. I apologize. I told you I would on Monday. I totally got busy at work, but I wanted to share you what happened. I did not call her after work to remind her to be on this morning. After work, I went out to a farm. I need to share this with you because I'm just like bursting with this information. The people who lived in the country might laugh at me, but for the first time in my life, I went out to a farm after work last night. I drove somebody out there, my friend Louisa Hamachek, who's an anti-nuke activist. She works on a farm. And once we got up there and I went to the house, her friend's house where she was visiting, I looked out on the vista and realized that we were far, far away from everybody, at least 10 miles away. Excuse me. Let me introduce you first to Ackerman. Ackerman, are you on the line?
This is Forest Dweller over here.
Yes. Well, please stop making noise because we can hear you shuffling around.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. So this morning we're going to be interviewing Ackerman about his ideas about conscience and the free radicals and the things that really what we're trying to do is create a tsunami, a wave of information so that we can stop the destruction of our planet, which is being ignored by everyone. And Ackerman has some very well thought out ideas. But I really got to get this out about the country because it's just like I can't believe it. I grew up in Los Angeles. I moved to St. Augustine, Florida. Well, I moved to New Orleans, back to L.A., St. Augustine, Florida, and back to L.A., Boulder, Colorado, and now Eugene. That's kind of where I've lived. Eugene is really the smallest town I've ever lived in my entire life. Like, this looks like a super small town. And when I went out to the farm last night, I was dumbfounded with this idea that I'm like super far away from everyone. It was the first time in my life where, when you go camping or you go do things, there's always people around. Even if you're, like when I was switchbacking through the trails in Boulder, Colorado, there was always somebody on the trail within a mile or 2 miles. But where I was out on this farm, there was nobody far away. It hit me like a ton of bricks what it really means to be a human being. Like how small we are in the big perspective. And I know people who've been out in the country, you've acclimated to this sense, but It hit me like a wave last night, and I'm going to tell you what, like, I'm still not over it. So I was really excited last night driving home thinking about the opportunity to interview Ackerman, because as we discuss his ideas, we're going to see that it really does relate to how we're all being trained to not only live in this culture, but ignore being killed. And it gives me at least a sense of compassion towards my family members, my friends, my neighbors, who all look at me like I'm an oddball because I'm freaked out about the current state of affairs in our environment, right? So hopefully, you guys, getting back to Mimi Gurman, before I had to stop Ackerman and introduce him, Mimi Gurman, and I called her on Monday after the nuclear alerts and asked her if she could be on the radio. It was an impromptu deal because of what's going on in St. Louis at the fires at the Westlake landfill. Radcast is the only organization that has tested the dirt. Somebody sent her some dirt, the People's Lab. They sent some dirt to get around the, I don't know the specifics of it, but they're the only ones. And so I asked Mimi, please don't tell me the information. I want you to share it with my radio listeners. So I connected with her before the show, and she must be out walking her dog or not. I mean, it was an impromptu thing, so she was not there when I tried to call her this morning. I did send her the call-in phone number. Maybe she'll call in the next hour. If she does, we'll add her to the phone conversation because I would love to talk to her about this. Let me just give you an update, because I don't know if many of you know this, but she and I were talking about this situation. My anxiety was that if the radioactivity caught on fire, that it would blow up. And she said, from everything she's learned from the scientists she's talking to, that is not something that would happen. That was kind of my anxiety. I have no concept. I'm not a science person, as you all know. That if it caught on fire, we'd have this big, huge explosion and St. Louis would, like, be wiped off the map. That's actually probably not highly probable. However, what would happen is the radioactivity is going to be released into the environment, 100%, unequivocally unstoppable. So they don't know how to stop what's going on there. Unless they can prevent it from happening, we're not sure that they know what to do to stop it. So that's kind of the graveness of it all. I'll let her explain that when she gets in, if she calls. So let me proceed with bringing in Ackerman, since he made sort of a noisy introduction of himself. So Ackerman, welcome to the show once again. I'm really grateful that you continue to, and thank you for the name of the Age of Fission, because what we're going to talk about is why this is important, because especially because we live in the Age of Fission, right?
Yes, hello. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, the Age of Fission. Not only are you welcome, but I would have been disappointed if you hadn't used it.
Well, good.
Yeah. And you're talking to the forest dweller, and I call myself the forest dweller because I live in a town called Forest. So I'm not exactly in the forest, but, well, actually, emotionally, I feel like I am. But your introduction to your program actually talks mostly about what it is that I really get wired on. The idea of what you say, love is greater than fear. And I think this is a topic that probably isn't really appreciated from the point of view that we're so mechanically oriented. It's like meat and potatoes, but the spirit, the soul, the heart, the emotions are really our main motivators in life.
That's true. That is the thing that makes us, that's what we think makes us human. I mean, we now know that a lot of the higher mammals have a lot of love emotions. They also exhibit these things. Other creatures exhibit these emotions.
So if a person would accept that as being true, then my point is, without disparaging anyone in their own efforts and what I call their mission, that it needs to be part of this conversation and understanding and action that incorporates this part of us. No matter if we look at Fukushima and the destruction that is currently going on every day, every second of the day, this is a physical fact. This is something that is happening physically, and people are focused in physically on this fact. And it's something that overwhelms me, quite frankly. I feel quite overwhelmed with this notion that this epic destruction is going on. So how do I counter that in myself that's feeling overwhelmed? And that's where my discussion comes in. That's what I'm trying to do to have an effect, you know, to change myself in my own life and to be able to deal with this. And frankly, I think that we don't need scientists to change this situation. We need people developing a conscience. That's what's missing. And no matter how many facts are on our plate.
Well, what do you mean a conscience? What do you mean by that? Let's just define it. When you say people need to develop, I think people have a conscience. I really believe that people have a conscience. However, they are not acting on their conscience for one reason. There's a variety of reasons that we've been socially programmed to claim. Each of us have taken a ticket. This is why I can't do it. That's why I can't do it. I can't be this. I can't do that. I mean, most, I would say at least the people I come in contact with, they find reasons why they can't do things instead of discovering what they can do. Right?
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Well, you know that at certain times people have criticized me using that word, but I'll just give a superficial rendering of the meaning. And if you look at the dictionary and you use the word conscience, it actually is made up of two words in the language. One is con, one is science. And the explanation of, first of all, is that conscience is an inner feeling or voice viewed as acting as a guide to the rightness or wrongness of one's behavior. So that is the dictionary definition, to do the right thing. You know, it's something that we have inside, a feeling or a voice that says, do the right thing. You know what's right, you know what's wrong. Now, what's interesting is, of course, in Spanish, you know Spanish, the word con means with. So if you have science, and if you look at the definition of science in the dictionary, it's the intellectual and practical activity encompassing the systematic study of the structure and behavior of the physical and natural world through observation and experiment. So a kind of objectivity about what it is that we're involved in. So if you have science and con science, you have with this is a curious sort of definition. If you think of con as with, or you could look at con as against or counter to, if you know what I mean. You see?
Yeah.
So I'm just sort of getting a little technical here on words because I words matter. It's sort of like Maxwell Jordan, the guy who...
I agree with you. And, you know, this is a big issue. I learned this in my quest to, understand life, is that thoughts are things. Thoughts really matter. What we think... Brian Tracy said this, you're not what you think you are, but what you think you are. So, like, if you know what I mean? It's really very important to grasp that concept because... It really does matter. That's about the four agreements. See, the four agreements, the number one agreement is be true to your word. And if you read the book, what it says is that you need to learn to counter. We have been trained in this civilization that we live in, that constant internal chatter. 90% of it is negative self-talk. The other 10% is bullshit about other people. You know, the ratios may be different with different people, but most of the time we have this self-talk that's negative all the time, that internal chatter. So that's really that's part of being true to your word, is turning off that internal negative self-talk.
Right. And my feeling about this circumstance we're in, we're going to come back to this, obviously, Lonnie, in terms of what it is we're facing, this destruction, and how does it relate to our very individual personal circumstance. It's like, this is on our watch, by the way. I want everybody to know, no matter whether you know or don't know, or ignore or avoid or whatever it is, it's on our watch right now. Now, right. I came late, like you talked about coming late to this. I've come late to this as well, because this has been going on for over 70 years.
Right. We bought the peaceful Adam. I actually really believed 100% that the government agencies were looking out for us. 100%. Like the NRC, when I first came into this, I did not understand, or the IAEA, their charter, their actual charter, it's written down. They are their language is very clear. First, the first part of the sentence is to promote the use of nuclear, peaceful nuclear energy. The second part is to protect the public health and safety. Well, guess what? You cannot do those two things at once, because once science started testing, real science, conscience, you're talking about conscience, right? The real scientists, Dr. Goffman, Linus Pauling, Arthur Tamplin, their scientific studies have not been disavowed. They have not been disproven. They proved unequivocally there is no safe level of radiation. It is harmful. And so it's the conscience that does matter, because interestingly enough, you bring up this con against, con with in Spanish, because the conscience in the United States was against the science.
Yes.
That was
yes.
them working on their conscience. They were
yes.
going against the science.
Right. Look at the word, and there's an answer within the word. So if you use the English interpretation of con as in con man against, you don't want science involved in conscience. But if you look at the Spanish version, which is with science, meaning the best, I that would be my interpretation, that science in its highest form to determine some kind of objectivity about, if that's even possible, about the world, the reality that we're in, that, of course, would be a high achievement to be with science in the best sort of sense. But I prefer the English version, which is leave science out of this and go to the heart, go to the feeling, go to the essence of our being that is not the physical world.
Well, I think that's the meaning of the conscience, right? Like, even if it is meaning against science, it really means you go with the intuitive, like with what you know to be right.
Yeah, like, I think, yes.
That's really what it's about. It's like, we definitely know what's the right thing. And you can see it in the faces of these people working in the nuclear industry. They understand they're being a little bit shifty and crafty, and they have this attitude. They really do have the attitude, as Dr. Alvin, what was his name, Weinberg said, they have the attitude of being a nuclear priesthood. They have the attitude of like, oh, well, we know what we're doing, you little people who don't understand science, right?
The question for me, Lonnie, would be, at which point is it a pathology that, okay, if you're looking, the examples you're giving about scientists who are willing to kiss off on everything, that becomes a pathology. They know, but refuse to accept the reality. This is not science. This is a pathology. And this is what you're talking about, the priesthood, that is a priesthood that is pathological. They're
Dr. Alvin Weinberg, who worked in the Manhattan Project, gave in 1972, I read this on my YouTube channel, Nuts for Art. And it basically said, he wrote an article called The Safety of Nuclear Power. He was a nuclear proponent. And he basically said, we have the world has now entered into a Faustian agreement because we have now created a nuclear priesthood, because we have created a waste byproduct that must be maintained by the people who understand it. We need the nuclear scientists. We must have them. We cannot do without these people. And they must take care of this stuff. This is the outrage of like what's going on when Donna Gilmore discovered down in San Onofre, the United States, our nuclear priesthood is totally screwing us. Our casts in the United States are only a half an inch thick, whereas other countries in, you know, like in Europe, they put them in 18-inch casts, 18 to 25-inch thick casts. In the United States, we use a cast that's only a half an inch thick or 3/8 of an inch thick, and we actually... we know for a fact that they start cracking in 20 years. So our nuclear priesthood has let us down. I mean, here in the United States, at least in Europe, they're making an effort to do something of conscience. Get it? It's still their conscience. You are so right about this issue. It is really a matter of conscience. And it's also the thing that makes people not act on their conscience. That's the other part of it. I mean, what do you think that keeps people from acting on their conscience, Ackerman? Like, what do you think it is that makes the average citizen that you talk to go, yeah, Fukushima is really bad, but man, those chemtrails. Or, like the GMO labeling. Like, people don't understand what this really means, the significance of this.
My explanation for that? What, why?
Yeah.
Number one, lack of spirit. And number two, not knowing what it is you're meant to do in one's life. Everybody has a mission, I say, and not knowing what that might be and sort of floundering about, kind of dabbing a little here, dabbing a little there, and not making an effort, spend the time. It's like, if I use myself as an example, I mean, when I was in my early teens, I started to draw. And then my parents, actually, you know, they wanted me to be a priest. They sent me to the Knights of Columbus, and they had this weird, crappy ritual where they bullied me. And I said, that's not for me. So I decided that's not my life. I can't belong to a club that would have me as a member, kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And I think what happened there, probably negative reinforcement, shoved me into this feeling of, I want to do this thing. I want to make drawings and I want to make paintings. And I didn't know whether this is the right thing for me, but I just stuck with it. And I chose right. It's better to be a painter than a priest, I guess. But you asked me, why are we facing this monumental challenge and this horrible reality? And that is, there's a lack of spirit in the population everywhere. I don't care what country, what color, what race, the lack of spirit. And the other part is not living our calling, our mission. So,
yeah, you know what, Ackerman, I'm going to call you on that. That's a really hard thing to say, not living your mission, because honestly, as a child abuse survivor, do you know what my mission was? Was to, like, not hate life. That was my mission. You know what I mean? Like, you know how many people, I mean, this, no offense, but this comes up with your white male privilege. I mean, this, when there's a conversation with Black Lives Matters and going on in this country anyways about white male privilege, it's really real. Like, people do not comprehend. Oh, wow, guess what? I'm going to stop this. I'm going to call in to, it looks like Mimi's trying to call in. So hold on just one second, okay?
Okay.
Good morning. You're on the air with Lonnie Clark and the Age of Fission radio show.
Hi. This is Mimi.
I'm so happy you called in. I'm on the, please join the conversation. I remember I told you I was going to interview Ackerman, and so I'm glad he's going to stay on the phone, but I'm really grateful that you called in, because you made a comment on my Facebook page that I called you up a couple days ago, and I really thank you for calling in. So how are you first? Let me ask you that. How are you?
I'm good. I've been taking care of my dog. She's a little bit sick today, and we have a vet appointment this morning, but not right now. So that's why I am so late to the game, and I'm so sorry to interrupt the conversation.
No, please. It's okay. We're talking about social engineering and the conscience. Ackerman's whole thing is people have lost their conscience. This is why they're not acting on their conscience. So, you know, on our show, on the Age of Fission radio show, we talk about the nuclear light. Looking at the nuclear industry, you have to actually talk about the social engineering and the whole process of what keeps people from stopping this nuclear monster and the lies and holding them accountable. So that's always part of our conversation here on the Age of Fission radio show. But the reason I asked you to call in is because you made a comment on my Facebook page. I have a GoFundMe page that is asking for, it says, a gamma spectrometer for radcast.org. That is your organization. It is an absolutely great website, by the way. We were talking about it this morning, Ackerman and I, before the radio show. We started poking around on it. It's really great. But one
Thank
of the
you.
Things that you we've done is Radcast has some type of a monitor that can monitor the dirt, right, and different types of soils. But what we're trying to do on the GoFundMe page is get a gamma spectrometer that will measure the levels of radiation in the food. And we're basically, they basically have what's considered like a people's lab. There aren't very many labs in the country that will test for radiation or can test because they're corporately owned, so they can't give you actual information. So why don't you explain what we're doing with the gamma spectrometer, because I'd like you to talk about that. And then afterwards, maybe you can move into what you've done with the Westlake landfill, because she left a message on my Facebook page that said, we're the only lab that's testing the dirt from the Westlake landfill, which I think many of us are very concerned about.
Well, let me start from the beginning. So RadCast does have a gamma spectrometer. We have the cheapest gamma spectrometer that you can get. It still works, but being that it's the bottom of the line, it could be a lot more sensitive if we got the next level up, which is what we'd like to get. We already have $2,000, $1,000 offered by one person I know, and another $1,000 offered by another person. It's only two people. And we need about, we need more money in order to get this gamma spectrometer.
It's like $5,800, right?
Right. So it's a total of $5,800, and we have $2,000. And,
well, I know
and
that the GoFundMe page has gathered about $200 so far, so...
Well, that's something.
Yes.
So when we get the next level of gamma spectrometer, we will be able to have a more sensitive lab than what we have right now, which would be very helpful. What we do is we do testing for free for people. We test seaweed from people on the coast of the West Coast, from California into B.C., and we also test soil samples along the West Coast. We've done many soil samples from Seattle, Portland, different parts of Oregon. And we have baselines now on what the soil is looking like for the most part. We need to do more testing, but I'm a little bit hesitant to continue doing testing there on the West Coast until we get a better lab. In the meantime, Westlake landfill has happened. There's a fire on one side of one landfill, and it is just about to touch the other landfill, which is a radioactive nuclear dump, and filled with uranium and radium and thorium and things that are killing the people over there right now. The cancer maps are just incredible. They're just full of dots of how many people have brain cancer. And there's a really rare cancer. It's so rare that it's almost unheard of, and it's appendix cancer. And they have so much appendix cancer over there that there's a map of appendix cancer.
And so, also, they have genetic problems. Like I heard a woman on Libby Halevy's show say all three of her children were born with issues, maybe not birth defects. I forget the term, but they had disabilities. And that is one of the things we know that radiation does cause is some type of disability among the children that are born. We know
it causes any kind of genetic defect that can occur from not being able to be born because the fetus will abort, or all the way through not having parts, body parts, or being born with cancers. That has occurred as well. So babies are being born with cancers. In fact, there was a Fukushima sailor, U.S. sailor, who's was affected by Fukushima, when the ship went over there after Fukushima happened, and they concurrently, they got pregnant and had a baby, and the baby was born with cancer. So we know this happens. Timothy Mousseau has done studies on the genetic effects of radiation on DNA, and we this is all factual. So I told the people over in the area of Westlake that I would be more than happy to take soil samples to our lab, to get soil samples sent to our lab, so that we can find out what is currently going on. Now, there is another lab that has done soil tests, about 300 of them, but the results of those are not out yet. I hear they're going to be published, but they're not published. So in the meantime, we are the only lab that is testing right now and will be posting as we get our results publicly, immediately, so that people can see what's going on. As of today, we've only done three samples. It takes these samples take hours to do. They take, like a day each to do. We have three samples done. What we're striving to get right now is background information on the soil. We can't know how things are until we can see a full picture. So I'm already working with the people over
explain
there. They are sending samples.
Would you explain that to me? You need to get What does that mean? You get the full picture. What does that mean? You need to find another place where it may not be contaminated.
No. What it means is, in order to tell somebody what is radiated, we have to see what normal soil looks like. Like what, and normal soil is what is. What does the soil in 10 backyards or 25 or 50 backyards look like in one particular area? Are they all the same? And does one stand out? And what are the levels of radiation in those soil samples? There's a lot to look at to be able to put a picture together. When
this
we're
is
dealing
why
with
you're
subtleties.
So valuable, Mimi. Honestly, thank you for calling in. This is why you're so valuable, because I feel like I reflect just kind of the average American picking up like this awareness that we are really under siege by this. And for me, I come into it with a lot of anxiety and misconception about how the science works. So I really appreciate you coming on regularly and updating us, because as you can tell by my questions, I kind of don't have a clue on what I'm talking about. one of the things you explained to me the other day is that this place is not going to blow up. It probably won't blow up if the fire gets to the gas, right?
Right. But what it will do is burn. And when things burn, they smoke. And the smoke takes the radioactive particles, the radionuclides that are in the soil in the landfill, and they aerosolize them. They put them in the air, and it goes up into the air, and wherever the wind blows, those then come back down. And in the process, if people are in the perfect place at the perfect time, they will breathe those particles in, and they will then have, whatever it is, whether it's, any form of uranium inside their body. And we don't live like that, we can't live like that. We'll get cancers from that. And that's what we're seeing over there right now, that's this is why there are cancers. This stuff does not sit very nicely and neatly in one place when it's on soil. It blows.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what I am going to do. I'm going to put on, I always mirror this. I have a playlist on my YouTube channel, Nuts for Art. And I will also go in on the UCY TV YouTube station when they post it up on their YouTube channel. And I'll put the gamma spectrometer, the link to the gamma spectrometer in both those places. Because really, as far as I'm concerned, if we just had, so you're telling me we have $2,000. So we really need another $3,000 or almost $4,800.
No, yeah, we need another $4,000,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, $5,800, really. That's
yeah.
The issue. But I was thinking, even if we just get 100 people to donate $50, that's a lot of money. You know what I mean? We just need...
That is
and there's how many people in the Northwest? Or people in Idaho? Or people in... I don't know, anywhere that's going to be downwind, of where we're at right now. I think it's very important, just like with the landfill testing that you're having. I can guarantee you those people in St. Louis that are sending you the dirt or picking up the dirt from the will be so grateful that they know what the levels of radiation is and what that means to them.
Well, one of the things that I want to explain to people is that Radcast, we don't make money. There's nothing about money for us. We get no money. So occasionally we'll get money from a meter sale, a Geiger counter sale or something like that. But we have no money, and we do this as volunteers because our government won't do it for us, and they do get paid to do it. So what are they doing with the money? But that's a whole other issue. So. We have no money. I can look at my bank statement for Radcast. There's nothing in there. There might be $100 in there. And that's just to keep the website going, And people want this information. You listening, you want the information, because if something happens in your area, you are going to want to get in touch with me, and you're going to want me to test your soil. And I'm going to say, of course I'm going to test your soil, because I believe that if you have the means to do something, you should do it. And I'm going to put that back on the people. If you have the means to give Radcast, if you have the means to give Radcast any money to help us do this for you or for anyone else, you need to step up and do that. This is the time to do that. We are being bombarded with radiation. From Fukushima, we are getting seaweed samples from BC now that are covered in cesium-137, and we're seeing 134 in there, which is it's the name tag of Fukushima, cesium-134. And we know that because we're getting these samples to our lab. And if you want to know these things and you want to know what's in your food, then add the amount of dollars to how you feel that information is to you and give us that so that we can get better equipment to give you what it is you want to know. And stop not giving us money. You can turn your whole thought process around and say, how valuable is the information that I want?
Yes,
you know, put your own money. If it's $5, give us $5. You know, I'm not saying you have to give us $100. Give us five. If we get 300 people who give us $5, we've gotten somewhere.
That's true.
But you have to stop allowing, you know, this free information just to keep coming because it's easy for you. We're still going to do it. We're going to do it regardless.
Well, this is the thing. I do know that there are people listening to this radio station, I know for sure, do regularly give here and there to different things. And I think that's part of the issue why people, it's a slow go with the GoFundMe page, because people, there are the people that are listening, like we're a small group, people that are aware of the issues with the nuclear industry and why we're being under siege right now. There's a lot of really good organizations out there, but I really agree with you. People need to stretch themselves. I know I made a contribution to the GoFundMe page. A friend of mine did. Another person, you know, connected with me and said, hey, we're sending money to this page. And it is gaining movement. And I think, really, as we move on, like, this isn't a very important thing in the Northwest for us to have something that can test our food. Like, that's the big issue, is really what's in our food, because we are not being told. It's so important for us to understand what type of radiation's in our food, because we understand how radiation affects different organs. So if we know we're having a one type of an isotope that attacks your thyroid or attacks your heart, there's things that you can do to help mitigate it, I think. And I don't know. I'm actually for more information than less. I think it is, for me, it's an urgent call. And it's also part of why I think, you know, this whole thing about closing down the Columbia Generating Station and figuring out a way to really get that one to move them forward. So, Mimi, while I have you on the phone, can I ask you something? It's completely off topic, but I hadn't talked to you about it. But I had heard that the earthquake assessment, Chuck Johnson sent me an email and said the earthquake assessment from the Columbia Generating Station is not required to be ready and prepared till 2019. Do you know about that?
Yeah, they actually had a due date. It was due, according to the NRC, it was actually due in 2015. And so 2015 came, and Energy Northwest, who is the main owner, the largest owner of CGS, called the NRC and said, well, we don't have it for you. We want an extension. So the NRC said, great. How about 2019?
What?
So that's how it works. That's just how it works.
Okay,
the NRC always gives the request from a nuclear power plant the yes answer. Whatever answer that they want is the answer they're going to get from the NRC.
Lola gets
right.
The attitude, like, it doesn't matter. So let me ask you this about with them. Now, do you think as us listening to this, if enough of us were to make comments and contact our senators, our congressmen, could we put pressure on the NRC to change that? Because frankly, in the Northwest, we don't have till 2019 to figure it out. We are living under right now, if you hadn't been looking off the west coast of the United States, there are earthquakes and tremors going up and down the coast of the west all around. It's anxiety making for me, understanding the threat that could happen anymore here. Like, I personally don't comprehend their lack of urgency about this issue.
Well, if people are going to put pressure on anybody, it should be on Washington. If you put pressure on Oregon politicians, they're just going to tell you they can't do anything about it, which in a way is true and in a way isn't true. They can also add pressure to Washington, but they won't because it's politically not cool to do that. So you have to call Washington directly. You got to call the governor and tell the governor that CGS needs to be shut down. And it's also good to call the mayor of Seattle and tell him he actually believes that nuclear energy is green and efficient and inexpensive.
What?
And yeah, he does. And that's why he's pushing his green agenda. And the new green agenda includes nuclear. So you can call the mayor of Seattle and tell him too, and he can have, you know, a big bombardment on his phone line would be awesome.
Yeah, well, maybe on Friday what I'll do is I'll get the mayor of Seattle's phone number and start putting it out on the airwaves every Friday when I have the call-in Friday. I'll just give out that phone number. I mean, we really do need to bring the conversation back around to it's not safe. Low-level dose of radiation is acceptable, but it is not safe. I mean, really, safe, the acceptable level, this is where people really miss the conversation. And
there is no acceptable level of ionizing radiation.
John Goffman, it's long, even the NRC says, we know that for every 2 rads of radiation in the air, we will get 32,000 cancers and leukemias, 250,000 genetic mutations every year for every 2 rads. Now, right now, I think we're at, 17 rads average in the air? So do the math on that. That's like over 1 million children with genetic problems and hundreds of thousands, over 100,000 of, you know, about 100,000 people that get cancer. Is that clean energy? I think it's not. And we need to remind people that that is not. Low dose is acceptable. Low dose means we are willing to allow a certain portion of the population to get sick for the benefit of having nuclear energy. That is not a reasonable thing to, you know, combined with the fact that they really have no answers for the storage of the waste, and the whole thing is becoming a big, gigantic mess. And it's all based on everything going perfectly well. All their numbers are based on nothing ever happening with the nuclear plants, the nuclear reactors, everything. And it doesn't even include the transportation, all the other problems that could happen along the way. So when you call, this is what I think maybe what I should do is formulate a letter and send it to the governor, because I think our elected officials need an education on this.
They do need an education, because all they're hearing from are the Bill Gates people out there, especially in Washington. And Bill Gates is the nuclear industry. He's trying to get nukes put in different countries around the world. He just pulled out of the Westlake Bridgeton fire in Missouri, and he didn't pull out because he doesn't believe in that landfill. He knows that landfill is about to blow up, and he doesn't want to be responsible for it, so he just pulled out the majority of the money that he had put in, which was like just a huge amount of money. And
stepping up to the plate and cleaning it and investing money.
Exactly. He just split.
It.
Yes, he just took off. He took his money out and split. And that's what Gates does. And he's okay, you have to understand that Washington is owned by Bill Gates. And he has so much control over the government in Washington, the state government, because of his money. And everybody knows this. This is not secret. This is just clear, you know, obvious information. And so the governor has to be called about CGS and, you know, to revamp his thoughts and his process on it. And he's much more important than this idiot mayor in Seattle.
Okay, so those are two places, the governor and the mayor of Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important for us to remind these elected officials that low dose does not mean no harm to the public. It means it's an exchange for the risk. The benefit is worth the risk, and we disagree with the risk benefit assessment. That's not really, I personally am not willing to allow 1 million children every year to get genetic defects or 100,000 cancers every year so that we can have 4% nuclear energy in the Northwest. That's not
right.
It. I mean, that's the whole thing. So.
So what were you both talking about before I called in?
So Ackerman, you want to share your idea here? Thomas?
Hello.
Hi, Tom. So Mimi just asked, what were we talking about? We were talking about the conscience. We were talking about how it's very important for people to work on conscience, and that word con and science, against science. I made this observation he was talking about, and I said, well, he was saying how the con is against and science, and what we really need to do is act on our conscience and do the right thing.
Ms. Gurman, hi.
Yes.
This is Thomas Ackerman.
Great to meet you on this radio show. I just want to say that I really appreciate what you're doing, and your website is fabulous, and I love the fact that the young people are getting involved. Bronwyn Dela Cruz is doing a report to the Canadian government, upstaging them and showing them how they've been negligent on reporting on the contamination. I think that's fabulous. The young people are getting involved.
Isn't it great? And all she did was she took the Geiger counter and went into a store and said, look, this works. This is what needs to happen. Yeah, she's brilliant.
I wonder what if there are going to be consequences. You know, when you stick your neck out like that on an industry that's probably the biggest and richest industry ever in the history of all humanity, there's going to be blowback. I think that takes courage. I want to say it takes courage.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it does.
Now, I have a question for you. I'm wondering, I'm a painter, I'm an artist. I don't come at this from a technical point of view. I come at it from an emotional point of view. And I was just wondering, what is it that got you motivated to be active in this, in this cause? And do you think it's the biggest, most pressing, urgent challenge that all of humanity faces at this point?
What got me interested in it is that I lived in Philadelphia when Three Mile Island happened, and I was a teenager. And I asked my father why we had – I didn't know anything about nuclear power, and I probably had never even heard of it for all I remember. And I said, why do we have an energy source that when it goes wrong, people have to evacuate and it can kill us? And I've never heard a good answer. I've never heard an answer. I've always been one for wanting an answer for anything. I'm very, I just ask a lot of questions, you know, and when an answer makes sense, I'll be satisfied. And I've had no answer regarding nuclear power that has ever made sense. So it got me interested. And then I went to an anti-nuclear demonstration soon after Three Mile Island happened. And I saw Helen Caldicott speak, Dr. Caldicott, and said, wow. This is a real human being, and she has the opposite answer. She has every reason why nuclear power shouldn't exist. And I learned a lot from her as a teenager and just kind of kept going. I went to school in New York and fought the Shoreham nuclear power plant from getting started and had my first arrest then and realized, you know, we have to fight. We have to fight for the things that are just wrong. And fight against the people who are only doing things to put money in their own pockets and who don't care about not only people, but any living thing, including the planet that we live on. So that was my motivating factor.
That makes sense.
And then I just sort of, yeah, then Fukushima happened, you know. Chernobyl happened. Fukushima happened. And then I realized I was living downstream from Hanford.
Wow.
Well, this makes a lot of sense to me from the point of view of the way I come at this and trying to activate something. I hear your frustration in terms of you understand how important this is. There is, as far as I'm concerned, there is nothing more important than getting this off the planet, under control and off the planet. And Lonnie and I are in conversations. And I think what you just explained is what I'm trying to talk about to people and through my work as well, through my paintings, is that you had a moment where this thing in you activated what I call conscience, and you couldn't, it's also your mission. It's what it is that you need to do. This is what I'm talking about. I think that's a brilliant story, what you just...
the mission.
You know, it's kind of like once you know what you know, and it's so terrible and so powerful, you can't, first of all, unknow it, and you also can't choose to do nothing. It's like the choice of doing nothing gets eradicated. And even if you go to find it, you're like, wait, I don't want to do anything anymore. You can't. You can try. But you'll always find yourself getting back up and fighting the same thing again because you know. You just know. And I think that's what happens. When there is truth that lives in you and in yourself, you just somehow, at least from my perspective as an activist, you can't negate it and try to do something else without continuing your own fight. It just seems like, I've met people like this too who have tried to put it aside and they can't.
Right. Well, it's that old adage, you don't know what you don't know until you know you don't know it. And once you know you don't know it, you can't ignore it. You can't go back to life as normal. It's like me with this. Like when my friends found out that I had agreed to take a radio show at 8 o'clock in the morning, they were like, oh my God, you must be serious. Because honestly, I've been in business for 18 years. My office starts at 10 o'clock. I'm not a morning person. I mean, one of my big things when I started in business was like, who decided the world has to start at 8 o'clock? The bankers. So it was kind of a form of like resistance, right, from me, from the man, to start my office hours at 10. So when I found out about this, it really has been the every day I wake up. And honestly, I think, is this going to be the week where we're going to make the monumental change? Like, I believe we're creating a tsunami of effort. We're doing the backswelling now, and they haven't seen it. The nuclear industry has not seen this effort. This is why they spend billions of dollars convincing, and Gates has a big hand in this, convincing people that nuclear is okay, that it, like this little joke that I read in this book, first thing we have to do is to convince people that good health isn't everything. That's really where they're at, you know? And so I think we are making a monumental change.
Well, to answer the second part of your question, it was that regarding, you know, the biggest issues that we're facing on the earth, I think that abrupt climate change is that. And we have taken our license to disrupt, destroy, and kill over the line. And for me personally, I do believe personally that we're at the end. And the end is coming really, really fast. And for me, the reason that I still fight to have nukes shut down immediately is so that while this last change happens, we don't exacerbate it any more than we already have by having droughts cause meltdowns in nuclear power plants due to lack of water for those cooling fuel huts, or fires that are raging across the West which are encroaching more and more on Diablo Canyon, on Hanford, on the waste dump, on the Columbia Generating Station. Every year we see these fires. They get closer and closer and closer. And I don't want to experience another meltdown. And that is my reason for wanting at this point to shut down all nukes. You know, again, my philosophy is that We are at the end. We've all done this, you know. We did it to ourselves, and that's how it is. And I don't. Go ahead.
So, what you're saying? It's a rather pessimistic view, which I share actually. But technically speaking, with your understanding of the science, to the extent that you understand it, is it possible to actually remediate or stop this from the killing and destroying everything, or are we beyond that point?
From what I know from the scientists who I listen to, who are many but not the majority, they will be the majority soon enough, the rate at which our Earth is heating up is beyond anything that is stoppable. And because it is now, we have so many, loops that have been created. So yeah, we can't stop these. So yeah. Instead of worrying about, we're already, just this year, we've moved up on the heat, you know, the heat level. And again, you can see I can't speak about this coherently yeah. because it's not my field. But what I do know is what I've been told, and I believe that science, that when we look at the heating up of the planet, it's not something we can take back anymore. We right. had an opportunity. And I remember when we were given that opportunity in the 70s, and people didn't listen, and people didn't listen in the 80s.
They didn't.
And then we had no more opportunity, and that's where we are now.
Yeah, well, we are in the sixth greatest extinction, and I've seen these charts that show that the mammal life is dropping off at a faster rate on our planet than the last great extinction when the dinosaurs were killed. They died off at a slower rate than the mammals on this planet. Like, I tend to agree, I think, but I believe that actually, you know, just like I believe that several hundred thousand years ago, we also had a great extinction then, there's studies that are showing now evidence that there was a civilization a few hundred thousand years ago. And I think that that's probably a probability, like, some few humans may survive, like that's the hope. This is my hope, is that I love humanity and I love the animals on this planet. So I'm hoping that some of us will survive and be able to come back and recreate and live on the planet. I mean, it's the spirit of love on our planet that really would be, that's what I really work for, is that not that we're going to save billions of people on the planet, that's an impossibility, but if we could save 2,000 or 3,000 people, so that we could repopulate the earth, to, you know, just create something so that we can survive. And the love, the spirit that we have within us, the love that we have, is a motivating force that helps us appreciate and experience the universe again, because we've lost our way.
I hear you, but I tend to disagree with most of what you just said regarding the humans. And my feeling about humans is that we've seen what humans do as a species. And I think that we have not evolved into a place where we can do love to the level that we need to do love. And until that can happen, I do not believe in I have no faith
in
humanity.
That's why I think, like, in the school of God, like, there's no flunking the school of God. You just start all over again. Like, we're going to have to recreate this. We're going to get a second. Maybe we will do it. Maybe this next incarnation of the life as we know it after what we've apocalypted ourselves into. But, you know, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing that we even have these conversations, don't you think, Mimi and Ackerman? Like,
well, you know, you bring God into it, who I also don't believe in, or what I also don't believe in, you know, because I do believe that if there was a God, this wouldn't be.
Well,
according
really
to what
God
people
is.
Say God is, you know.
I guess
so.
That's a highly charged word. I'll just say the universe, because I don't think any of our energy ever goes away. I think we keep evolve, like, we're part of the universe. Like, as a consciousness, we humans get to feel love, and we get to express ourselves in ways that other creatures on this planet can't, and we have a missed opportunity.
I disagree with that as well. I feel that animals and plants all communicate yeah. with each other in a way that we are too deaf to hear. But when we experience psychoactive drugs or psychoactive medicines, which I've done my fair share of, then we are in tune with what those plants and what those animals and how those plants and how those animals experience communication. And with us too. And yes, we are a part of that. But again, we have not evolved to become a species that is even high enough to hold that.
Well,
and maybe
I'm going to have to let that end. We've got 15 seconds. Thank you for this fabulous conversation. And Mimi, I really want to have you back to explore those thoughts. And Ackerman, thank you for joining us, you guys. Put your courage feet on. Thank you for joining us.
Right.
Thank you.